Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Pop the popcorn, sip that soda, and get comfy. From Middle Earth to your screen comes not one, not two, but three thrilling tales out of J.R.R. Tolkien's world. I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle Earth wanderer, and today you and I are joined by John from the Lorehounds podcast. Together, we will nerd out on the numerous on-screen adaptations that are in the works for Lord of the Rings fans. Now, let's wander. John, welcome to Lore of the Rings podcast. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me here. I know you've been on our feed, and now I finally get to debut myself on your feed.
Yeah, absolutely. So welcome to Lore of the Rings. This is where we wander the world and works of J.R.R. Tolkien. We're going to talk about all of the upcoming shows for Middle Earth, all the on-screen adaptations that are coming our way. But before we do, I just want to calibrate a little bit. So for my listeners here, so help us understand, what is your experience with Lord of the Rings? How deep are you into the lore?
I'm pretty deep. I'm pretty deep. Helm's deep, one might say. I started back in 2022 podcasting about the Lord of the Rings, and I think that people just kind of looked to me to teach them about the extended universes as I was leading a read-along on a Discord server. And then my co-host reached out to me, David, and he said, hey, let's do a Lord of the Rings podcast. It kind of blew up, and we got a good audience during Rings of Power, and we've been going ever since. We do a lot more than just Tolkien right now, but we are still going strong with the Tolkien. We do a monthly reading of the Silmarillion. We're going to be doing Rings of Power Season 2, full coverage. And so I've read the Silmarillion several times. I'm deep into that. I've read a bunch of the other extended works, though not all. And I'm just always happy to talk Tolkien.
All right, that's fantastic. In fact, that's one of my questions. When people want to start talking to me about Lord of the Rings, I first ask, well, have you read the books? Okay. Have you heard of the Silmarillion? Okay. Have you read the Silmarillion?
Yep.
How many times? And so it's like, okay, if you've read it several times, then you're in the right place. So this is going to be a fun conversation. So 20 years ago, I was a teenager. I was the target market for Peter Jackson and his brand new movies, Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, Return of the King, each coming out 1 year apart from each other. And I can just remember that year between Fellowship and Two Towers was just agonizing. It was so long. But at the same time, we knew it was coming, right? We knew it was almost exactly 1 year apart, and that was exciting. And nowadays, as a Lord of the Rings fan, we have so many amazing shows coming our way. So Let's start with War of the Rohirrim, this animated show that's coming out supposedly in December, although the trailer and the marketing has been pretty thin on that. But War of the Rohirrim, let's start there. What's your take on War of the Rohirrim so far?
Yeah, I've got so many mixed feelings about this one. I mean, what a cool story with Helm, Hammerhand. But then you also have the rights issue where it seems that Warner Brothers might be doing this largely to retain rights, film rights in the Lord of the Rings universe. Mm. So that feels a little like, is this going to be fully fledged the way that we want it to be? But then everything I see about it looks good. The cast looks great. You've got Brian Cox as Helm Hammerhand. You've got Miranda Otto as
Otto. Yep.
Yep. Yep, as Eowyn. I had to check the name, but, you know, bringing back Eowyn from the Peter Jackson movies, that's great. I'm looking forward to seeing this. You know, animation doesn't take away from it for me. I love a good animated series, so really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, that's an interesting concern that you bring up about just wanting to keep the rights issue. That reminds me, like, I think Spider-Man and Sony have some sort of a similar contract where every, like, 5.5 years or something, there has to be a new Spider-Man movie, or else Sony loses the rights forever. And that's why there's sort of, we get inundated with Spider-Man. Are you kind of concerned maybe Warner Bros. Might be doing something similar where it's like, yeah, we just got to keep these rights, so let's just kick something out to the audience?
It just feels so muddied at this point because you have this Embracer Group acquisition of the Lord of the Rings IP in so many ways. You know, they own certain rights, but it's not clear which rights. Definitely gaming rights, things like that. And I know we're going to talk about another project coming from that group later today, but I have no idea how these rights work. We tried to break it down on our original Second Age podcast, and I got more confused the more I read about it.
Yeah, it's complicated, and I haven't dug into that issue very much, but it's who owns Middle Earth and the Lord of the Rings? Not a very clear cut answer.
Right.
So that's a difficult one. So War of the Rohirrim, set to take place, the founding story of Helm's Deep. What do you think about the decision to use sort of that isolated time frame, an isolated story with a good beginning and an end? Was that a wise choice, or do you think it might be so out of everybody's realm of experience that it might just be a miss?
You know, I think one thing is having Miranda Otto back ties it to the Peter Jackson movies enough where people will go, huh, let's go see and give this a shot. Also, you know, the Lord of the Rings brand just draws people broader than the people like you and me who read all this stuff all the time,
Brett.
Which is why the Rings of Power is called the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, all that kind of branding nonsense. And on the one hand, you have this concern about, is this a rights issue? Is this, they want to keep the rights? On the other hand, you're like, well, if they just need to make a movie to do the rights, maybe it'll be interesting because they didn't feel like it needed to appeal to the broadest number of people, and they were able to tell a discrete story that may appeal more to, dare I say, a lorehound than the general public. You know, I think that that's an interesting place to be in. That's a place where anything could happen. This could be really generic and kind of bland, or it could be a beautiful retelling that appeals to people who really are deep into the legendarium.
Yeah, absolutely. The story itself is pretty interesting. You know, I remember going back, it comes from the appendices. You've got Helm and some interesting infighting within Rohan and some of the other men that come outside and some rivalries there. But I should have looked up the story beforehand, but I just remember this scene of Helm, like, in the snow, sneaking out into the snow, and he would sort of sneak up on his enemies and sort of ambush them at night, all on his own in the snow, and they called him like the ghost of Rohan, so I'm looking forward to the story. I'm not super invested in this particular adaptation because it's an okay story. Sure, it's an origin story of a place that had a cool battle in the films, but it's not necessarily fully connected with the Ring saga and the grander good versus evil sort of epic battle that Lord of the Rings is. So I'm not too invested. Sure, I'll go see it. I'm interested to see what they do with it, but I'm not super, I'm not worried, I guess I'll say about that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm interested in what they are going to do with the characters themselves, and can you make me care about certain characters? You know, we're about to, on my podcast, we're about to start covering House of the Dragon season two, and that's a show where everyone was skeptical because it felt so divorced from the stakes of the main Game of Thrones show. But then you watch it and you start to care about these characters, and suddenly things are good and meaningful. And so if they can do that in War of the Rohirrim, they'll have succeeded. If they can't sell me on the characters, then they won't have succeeded.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing to bring up. Sometimes it doesn't seem so connected, but if you can help the audience feel really invested and connected with the characters, then maybe there's something there. Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit now to another Warner Bros. Project that was just recently announced within the last weeks. Tentative working title, The Hunt for Gollum. Peter Jackson is back. Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, maybe Viggo Mortensen. We know Andy Serkis is on board. General high-level take on The Hunt for Gollum.
Man, I don't know. Because, one, there is a lovely fan-made film on YouTube titled The Hunt for Gollum.
Mm.
And it is very well-received. We actually talked about some fan films on one of our earliest episodes, and I know my co-host David just loves that fan film.
Yeah.
And it's a cool story. I don't understand how it can span a whole movie. That's one thing.
Okay, so I haven't seen this. So how long is it on YouTube?
I think it's like 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
It's not long at all. I don't understand how you can make a whole movie out of it. And then the other thing is, they just did this failure of a Gollum game.
Why
do we think that Gollum is the character to focus the most on, right? Gollum is interesting next to Frodo. I don't think he's interesting on his own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a good foil of a character. I don't think he's a good main character to follow in a particular story. I mean, there's not much to like about him except for you to exercise pity, right? As a warning to Frodo of what he could become potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I share the same concerns. Like, Gollum, really, like, when we wanted to explore Middle Earth, none of us went and, you know, started researching more about Gollum. But the other side to me that is interesting is, this isn't necessarily Gollum, it's the hunt for Gollum, right? And and who did
it's
that
the
hunt?
Dunedain, right?
Right. Right, it's the Dunedain. You've got Aragorn. You've got a little bit of Gandalf on that trail as well, and so what we read in the Fellowship of the Ring, we read a lot of events that are going on in the Shire at this time, and it's only after Bilbo's party where Gandalf begins to suspect, hey, maybe this, you know, magical powerful ring that Bilbo has had all these years, maybe that might be the One Ring from Sauron, and he starts looking for Gollum. So I am a little bit heartened at the prospect of following Gandalf and Aragorn in some of their pre-Fellowship of the Ring activities, which include the hunt for Gollum. I don't know if you think there's any hope there, or if we're just going to focus straight up on Gollum.
Hope is never mere, if you listen to Gil-galad and Rings of Power. But yeah, I mean, I'm not super excited for this. I'm obviously going to see it. We'll see if it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I do have a lot of faith in Peter Jackson and his team and in Andy Serkis. Hobbit trilogy, notwithstanding, I don't entirely lay the blame of that onto Peter Jackson. But when it comes to him being able to have full reins of a project, I do have a lot of trust and hope in what he's able to do. So perhaps I'll pull something out.
Should we place bets on which random actor he's going to shoehorn into this, like he did in The Hobbit?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Yeah.
What? Who's the random actor?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like it's probably can't be somebody who's leading in a lot of, like, the first one that comes to mind is Timothée Chalamet. But you know, we've just been watching Dune, so I'm like, yeah, why not throw some Paul Atreides in the middle of Middle Earth and see what happens.
I'm going to go with Charlie Day as one of the Dunedain. That's where I'm at.
Charlie Day. Remind me who Charlie Day is.
Oh, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Okay. All right.
I'm just joking around here.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. Do you think that Aragorn, do you think that Viggo Mortensen would actually come back as Aragorn? Do you think he would do that?
I mean, he said he would, but there was a big caveat there, which was if it made sense for the story, and kind of doesn't make sense for the story, right? He was already substantially older than Aragorn should look mm-hmm. in the filming of the Peter Jackson trilogy, and he's 20 years older now. I just don't think it makes sense for him to play a young Aragorn.
Yeah, it would be tough. So who would be your pick of young Aragorn?
That's tough. I could see... I can't remember his name, but the actor for Kristen Cole in House of the Dragon, I think he'd be a good one.
Okay. Yeah. I'm seeing that. I could see that as a young Aragorn. He's kind of got that look, a little bit of that, darker Numenorean, mm-hmm. Hair and eyes complexion. Yeah. I could definitely see that as a young Aragorn. I'm with you on that.
Who'd you cast?
You know, again, I am so bad at saying, hey, here's this great actor on these screens, because here's the thing for me is I'm such a nerd. My nose is always stuck in the books, and I'm just like, oh, okay, what's going on out there? And it's like, unless it's like a super major film, I hardly am going to see it, right? So,
do you know, we could go with Peter Jackson's original pick for Aragorn in the trilogy.
Oh, shoot. Not Nicolas Cage.
It was Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Oh, Nicolas Cage. Oh, that'd be great. Or what about that one guy that they had chosen and he filmed for a couple of weeks and Peter Jackson was like, no, you're not it. And they kicked him off and recast. Do you remember that guy's name?
Oh, boy. I don't remember that guy's name. And that's you know, press F for feels, right? press F for to pay condolences.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, so I'm getting the sense from you, Hunt for Gollum is just another one of these, like, okay, I'll go see it, but there's not too thrilled about that particular story or upcoming
episode. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't help that Embracer Group is a corporate mess right now that is floundering, one might say.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Did you play the Gollum game? What was that, about a year ago or so?
I did not play it because the reviews were just so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I heard. I'm not a huge video gamer to begin with. And then kind of some of the things that I was hearing from the community, I just thought, nah, I'll pass on this one. But
mm-hmm.
If you're listening to this and you absolutely love the Gollum game and you're a huge Gollum fan, then reach out to me. But I'm pretty sure we're not going to get anybody.
Right, all right. Right.
Let's talk the big kahuna. Let's talk Rings of Power. Season 2. We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
A new trailer was just released a couple of days ago. What was that, last week or so? I guess it's been a couple of weeks. Big trailer. We've seen some images. Tom Bombadil, help me get a sense for, what was your take on Rings of Power season one? Was that like two thumbs up for you? Kind of thumb in the middle, two thumbs down? Where do you sit on that?
I'm one thumb up.
Okay.
One thumb up. They did a good, not great job, I thought. I thought they made some baffling lore decisions with Mithril. I did enjoy a lot of the characters. I thought that some of the plot lines got a little tired and the pacing was not great. I think I can attribute most of my issues with it to the inexperience of the showrunners, just not doing a great job making it make sense for TV. Like, they clearly knew a lot about Tolkien's lore, and they clearly knew generally where they wanted to go with it. But I think they had some issues translating their vision to screen. Now, they have a whole new slew of writers. They are working hard to make season two even better. I think they learned a lot from season one. Mm-hmm. And I'm really rooting for them to have a great season two. Of course, we have a new Adar, which is a strange thing to go into for season two. Mm-hmm. We have, it looks like, a lack of Bronwyn. I don't think she's going to be involved too much with this season.
Yes.
Due to the actor's availability, I guess. And just a lot of changes. And then Tom Bombadil comes out of nowhere. Tom Bombadil is just going to be here in the East in Rune, which was shocking to me, because to me, Tom Bombadil and the forest go hand in hand.
Yes.
And I'm not opposed to it. I'm genuinely not opposed to it. I think it's going to be funny. I think it's going to be fun. Tom Bombadil is one of my favorite characters in the Legendarium. Yep. I want Goldberry too. I don't think we're going to get it. I would love to see Tom Bombadil being on an expedition to figure out where the Entwives went. I think that would be a fun way to bring him into the story. But clearly he's going to be some kind of mentor, wise figure along the Stranger's path.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Tom Bombadil, because in the episode just previous to this one, I just looked at how Tom Bombadil sort of is introduced in the chapter of the Old Forest to Frodo and Sam, and saving Merry and Pippin from Old Man Willow. Tom Bombadil he's this very jovial person, right? He's got this glad ring-a-ding voice that's singing. Ring-a-ding dillo. He's got like the laugh lines in his eyes, creases on his face. And I just was not seeing that. There were some images released in a Vanity Fair article about Tom Bombadil in Rings of Power 2, Season 2, when he was announced. And I was just not seeing the happy, jovial, laughing Tom Bombadil. So I like you, I'm rooting and hoping that Rings of Power will be a successful, entertaining show. I have very little trust that the showrunners can actually do that and pull it off. And these images about Tom Bombadil that have come out are not helping my mistrust in the showrunners. I don't know what you think of so far, how he looks physically. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to judge too much based on the stills. I mean, things could be very different in the final. These could have just been, getting ready to shoot. Just, hey, pose like that. It's fine. I mean, I remember we were talking about House of the Dragon season one, and we were going over production stills for, I don't know if you watched that season, but
I have not yet.
Okay, so there was this one episode where they shot a nighttime episode during the day, and they put a blue filter on the cameras, and so you can see the sun in the sky, and the stills that came out from that episode before the season had them in daytime. These similar scenarios. Okay. And so I wonder how close these images are going to be. Like, the costumes obviously going to be pretty close, but the mannerisms, the look of his face, I think that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I am a little tentative. I mean, we're just judging this off of, three photos, right? Like, who knows how this character is actually going to be when we actually get to see it. I just, if I were a showrunner, or at least somebody in the show in charge of marketing, and I knew anything about Tom Bombadil, I just would not have said these are the pictures in which Tom Bombadil is going to make his on-screen debut.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't have announced it at all if I were in charge of marketing. I thought that was silly. Let him be a delightful surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would have been amazing because we've had a couple of different animated Lord of the Rings. We had Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings. And you talk Tom Bombadil of people who have only seen the movies and they're like, what? Who's that character? And those of us who know are like, yeah, that's the question. Who is Tom Bombadil?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, I totally agree with you. Perhaps just keeping him that a secret and just letting that be revealed, bam, in one of the episodes, that would have been a really thrilling moment, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how he comes in the books, right? Is Old Man Willow is taking the hobbits to town. And all of a sudden, you get, hey, doll, Mary Duck. And it's great. It's just great. It's a great moment. And let me tell you how much I love Tom Bombadil. I don't know if you follow that Magic the Gathering had a Lord of the Rings set last year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a Tom Bombadil Magic deck. That is like my favorite deck to play.
What makes it such a unique deck for you? Beyond the visuals, like how did they encapsulate Tom Bombadil that makes it so unique for you?
It is a deck based on sagas, which are what I see as like songs, right? This happens on this turn, then the next time you turn the page and get to the next part of it. And what Tom does is every time you finish a song, you immediately go to the next one. You flip through your deck until you get to the next song randomly. It's going to be random, which is a lot of fun. And then if you have four or more lore counters on your sagas, he's indestructible and hexproof. So he is all powerful once you get a bunch of songs going, basically, is how I see it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. He is certainly all powerful, hexproof. And what else did you say? Indestructible and hexproof?
Indestructible. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's definitely some scenes from the book that would say, yeah, he's hexproof. The ring has no power over over Tom Bombadil, right? You still have to get over the motivation problem. Like, would Tom Bombadil ever care to be in any sort of confrontation when he can just be singing his songs, sipping his water next to Goldberry in the forest, you know?
Yeah, and you wonder, depending on the kind of being that Tom Bombadil is, which, by the way, Payne and McKay, the showrunner, said that they're not going to opine on. They're not going to decide what to label him in this show, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on what kind of being he is he sort of there kind of like the Istari, where he wants to help guide those who fight against the darkness in his own way? And is he going to then follow Nori back with the Harfoots to settle in what would become the Shire and then the Old Forest next to it, right? Did he end up there not by happenstance, but because he knew that these people would have a part to play in the Third Age?
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess there might be some connection with Second Age Tom Bombadil and sort of the precursors of the Hobbits. Just knowing the trivia or the lore that we know, it's like the Shire was not even founded until far into the Third Age, so it's like that's a long time for Tom Bombadil to be hanging out in the desert of Rune when as you say, he is intimately connected with the forest, right? He's the lord of those little lands. Mm-hmm. And he keeps that little place he keeps that in order in right there next to the forest.
Well, I'm gonna pitch this to you. How about he goes with Nori and the Hobbits and the Harfoots to where the Shire would be, but they hit the Withy Windle and he goes, oh no, this is the place to be. This is the place to be. And he hears Goldberry singing. And that's that.
Oh, yep. Okay. So they're traveling north. He finds Goldberry and he settles down. Boy meets girl. We're going to do a boy meets girl Tom Bombadil story.
Mm-hmm. I would love that. I would love that.
Yes. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Give me Goldberry or give me death.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I love Tom Bombadil. He's a really enigmatic, interesting character. But to me, I think Goldberry is the real, that's the real mystery for me, is who is Goldberry and how does she put up with Tom? So yeah. The trailer for Rings of Power, there's lots of interesting things there. They seem to be really focusing on Sauron and Annatar now. I think season one was a lot of well, is there evil still in Middle Earth? And if so, is it even, how can we find it? But season two, it's like, nope, right. Evil's out there. It's revealed. He's moving stuff. So kind of what's your take on Sauron and Annatar now that he's been fully revealed, and where are they going to go with him in season two?
I am so excited for Annatar. I think it will be interesting to see what they do with it, because he obviously is Charlie Vickers still, and yet he is supposed to be different looking. So I think they're trying to signal to us, like, the audience is supposed to know this is the same guy, but not the elves. Like, imagine he has a different face. I hope that he acts completely different from Halbrand. I hope that it's really convincing, and that Galadriel has to figure it out in a different way, or somebody has to figure it out in a different way. I do think we are probably going to see the fall of Regian at some point this season. I don't think there's a way around that. Mm-hmm. If you're going to keep this plot moving, which is sad, because Ostinetto looks like a fun place. You know, you've got the statue of Feanor, you've got the hammer of Feanor, and Celebrimbor seems like a nice, if a little wimpy old man. And I just don't want to see this guy suffer. Yeah. Oh, true creation requires sacrifice. And you're like, is that a Tolkien thing? Or is that, you know, is that in line with Eru Iluvatar, or is that Feanor talking?
Yeah. I mean, you just hit on the head. Kind of one of the things for me is you get all these little one-liners, at least from season one. You get all these little one-liners like, a dog can't howl at the moon, but it can't bring it down, or, you know, something like mm-hmm. that, or give me the meat and give it to me raw. Hope is never meager. I kind of would listen to those, and I kind of felt like the writers were sort of like, hey, we're trying to say something really cool and epic and condensed like Tolkien would, but it's not Tolkien's works, and it kind of falls flat. That was just for me one of the things that was like, I don't know if I can trust you with a Tolkien tale. And I'm looking at season two.
It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. What's your take on that?
I think the only one that really made me cringe was with our hearts even bigger than our feet. That one really hit me wrong. But the other ones, I really wasn't too bothered by. I thought they mostly captured the characters that they were spoken by. I mean, Celebrimbor clearly is ego-driven, clearly is obsessed with how can I create something great like my grandfather did. I mean, he's the only grandson of Feanor, right? He is the last stand of this house. Everybody else is from the house of Fingolfin or Finarfin. And if you don't know what we're talking about, because I know, Aaron, you told me to explain myself if I go too deep into things. There are three houses of the Noldor. Only one was from Feanor, and that is Celebrimbor as the last descendant of this house.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you need a refresher on that tale, go back and listen to, I don't know, probably about episode 15 or so of Lord of the Rings, and you'll get a good, go back and look at there, and you'll get a good recap of Fingolfin and Feanor and all the things going on there. But Celebrimbor, yeah, he is walking in the shadow of his grandfather, who created the three amazing Silmarils, which contain the remnant of the last light of the two trees of Valinor. And that is one of the central, or the central arc of Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth, right? From the first to the second to the third age. And Celebrimbor is just trying to follow in those same footsteps and be like his grandfather.
And we'll see where that takes him, I guess.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read the Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.
What do you make of the black gooey worm stuff? Did that resonate with you at all? Did that connect to any lore that you're aware of?
So taking it with the knowledge of season one, my guess on our trailer breakdown, because we did like an hour and a half breakdown of this trailer, and we did a visual breakdown of it too. My guess would be this is a flashback to Adar killing Sauron and then Sauron reconstituting out of his remains.
Okay. All right. I can get that. I mean, we do know that
we know Sauron is a Maia, right?
Right.
So he can come back from being killed in his body because he's not one of the Istari.
Yep.
Because the Istari have extra limitations. I'm not going to go too deep into that right now, but
the Istari are the wizards. Yeah, so think Gandalf and Saruman. Mm-hmm. Yep. Keep going.
Yep. And so we know that Sauron can reconstitute. Maybe Adar didn't. And so Adar is like, oh, I killed Sauron. That's why he says that to Galadriel. He means it. He killed Sauron's body. Yeah. Sauron goes, yeah, sure, I'm dead. And then he comes up, bubbles up from the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I could buy that. When I first saw that trailer, I was just thinking, what in the world is going on here? I just watched Dune and I've been reading Dune and I'm like, okay, well, there's the sandworms of Arrakis. Are we now doing like the gooey worms of Middle Earth? That's as far as my creativity went at that point in time. Sad to say.
Fair enough.
Sad to say. There's one other thing from the trailer that I wanted to ask you about. Wasn't Elrond? Wasn't Galadriel? Oh, the Harfoots. There. From this trailer, there was a distinct lack of Harfoots. I think maybe we see one sort of flying. There's like a sandstorm going on, and we know that there's a couple of Harfoots, Harfeet. I don't know the proper way to say that. There's a couple of them with the stranger in Rune. Are you looking forward to seeing more of the Harfoots?
Yes. And I don't think I would have said that when I finished season one.
Okay.
But the more I think about it, the more I want to see the Harfoots settle the Shire. I want them to learn to settle down somewhere. I would like to see the beginnings of Shire society.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. And again, it's just, I think I know too much, right? Because the timeline just isn't matching. But I know the showrunners intentionally compressed the timeline, right? So for the casual viewer, it might be a great thing. But I don't know. I look at this and I'm like, maybe I've just read too much Tolkien, and I just can't break that away from my mind. Maybe I've ruined myself for watching Rings of Power.
Yeah. I hear you. I mean, the whole timeline, right? Like Annatar should happen hundreds or thousands of years before the Numenor incidents with Sauron. So it's going to be what it is. I think we can just look at this as this is an inspired retelling of the major events of the Second Age. It does not have to be an exact adaptation. Some people have said it's Noldor propaganda. Because they don't say, in the beginning of Rings of Power, you have Galadriel saying like, yeah, you know, Morgoth stole the Silmarils and we went over and we went to go take vengeance. And that's all they say. She doesn't say, also, we burned a bunch of ships on the way over and
the kinslaying killed a bunch of other elves. We were exiled by the Doom of Mandos. Yeah.
Yeah. She's giving the Melian and Thingol version of this story, not the real version.
Right. Yeah, I actually just read that the other day, because that's going to be the Silmarillion story that I think I'll be joining you on your show for that. So,
right.
Yeah, what does Galadriel actually say, and how much of the truth does she share? So, Noldor propaganda. We're the good guys here, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
that's why Celebrimbor is all majestic here.
Yes, exactly. So let's say Peter Jackson comes to you. He calls you up. He says, "Yo, John from the Lorehounds podcast. I need your top three ideas for the absolute best Middle Earth stories that we could put on screen. What would be your top three stories?
Oh, man, I feel unprepared for this question, but I'm going to go for it anyway. I would like to see the aftermath of the War of the Rings. I think that it would be a really interesting thing to see Aragorn bring the realm at peace, try to, you know, get the men of Rune and the Southlanders to behave with each other. You know, the war didn't end just because Sauron was destroyed. There was plenty after war that we did not really see. I would enjoy that. I would enjoy seeing Aragorn's battles with Theoden earlier on. How Aragorn traveled around. Like, if you're going to do the Hunt for Gollum, do a bunch of Aragorn's travels, right? Like, make it an anthology.
Yes. Yeah, that plus he was leading wars in Gondor under a different name. You know, never came across Boromir, but he pushed back some of the, I think it was the Men of Umbar or something. Aragorn was doing some pretty legit stuff before he shows up as a ranger in a cantina in Bree, right? So that would be some really pretty fun stuff to look at. And number three for you.
Now, am I limited to rights that they have?
No.
Or can
no,
I go into
I'd
the
say
Silmarillion?
Everything
oh,
from
okay.
when
I should have chosen way more. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I should have gone way more wild. That's okay, all right. That's all
let's,
right. I'll,
let's
I'll,
do it
I'll
again.
Stick to
let's
my
do
first
it again.
Two.
Okay. All right. And your
I'm
third,
sticking,
your wild
I'm
card.
I'm sticking to them. My wild card is going to be the Children of Húrin. Should just be its own. I would say a mini series. I think you could do it in a 10 episode mini series.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. What is it about Children of Húrin that speaks to you?
It's the most morally complex story Tolkien ever wrote, I think.
Yeah.
It is. It's fascinating. Every time somebody says, you know, I talk to these Game of Thrones folks, you know, they think that their guy, George R. R. Martin, is so cool. But every time somebody says that he is so much more nuanced than J.R. Tolkien, I'm like, have you read The Children of Húrin?
Yeah.
Have you read Of Turin Turambar? And I just think that's a fascinating story because it's so tragic and kind of has no moral. Like, nobody could have done much different. I mean, Turin could have, but most of what happened to him was through deception and accidents.
Yes. Yeah. And just straight up curse from Morgoth, right? And and seeing it through the lens of that curse. Yeah, The Children of Húrin, that is a complicated tale. And you know, we often look at Shakespeare or even the Greeks and some of their plays, and they're like, yeah, this is what it means to be tragedy. But I'm like, Children of Húrin is up there with the best of them. You know, if you want to analyze tragedy for all of its foibles, Children of Húrin is definitely that tale for sure. And it's such a stark contrast to the typical optimism and hope-filled, and yes, things seem bleak and dark, but there is always light, right? There's light beyond the darkness. It's so outside of that typical Tolkien sort of a feeling. So,
The sword was happy in the end.
Yes.
Yeah. That was about it. The talking sword was happy in the end to take Turin's blood. What would be your three?
You know, this that's a difficult tale question. I would really love to see Fingolfin fighting Morgoth outside of the gates of Thangorodrim.
That's a good one.
That one for me would be awesome. I'll give myself the same parameter. So that would be my Silmarillion one. That I'm a Beren and Luthien aficionado. Like, I just love the tale of Beren and Luthien, and so just to explore that tale, Eärendil. Okay, now I've just gone too far. I've gone too far in Silmarillion. I actually love the Silmarillion way more than I love The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings. So,
I do too.
I
do too. Yeah. I mean, I'm just reading, you know, we were doing the whole Silmarillion with this podcast that you're about to be back on. And we just did, you know, of the Return of the Noldor, and you have Fingolfin coming in with, you know, these like trumpets and the sun rising behind him for the first time. I'm going, this would be a great movie shot, right? is just him Beautiful. Coming in the desperation of the Noldor of, you know, you have here's my fourth one. Here you go. Is the rescue of Maedhros by Fingon.
Oh,
I
yes.
think would be a really great movie segment.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought that up, because there's some great parallels between that story and the story of Sam and Frodo when Frodo has been caught up in the Tower mm-hmm. of Cirith Ungol, and you can almost paste carbon copy on top of each other with some slight differences that are really interesting to look at. So yeah, that would be a fantastic yeah. movie for sure. If I had nice. To limit myself to Lord of the Rings and the appendices for the purposes of legal rights, I would be thrilled to see Galadriel overthrowing the foundations of Dol Guldur in the War of the North, right? So in the books and in the movies, we follow Frodo, we follow Aragorn, we follow Gandalf. They're fighting Sauron on the main front, but that's not the only place where Sauron is moving. He's attacking, right? And mm-hmm. you've got Galadriel and Celeborn leading the elves and dwarves against an army of orcs in the north, and Galadriel single-handedly takes out the foundations of Dol Guldur. I'd love that. That'd be awesome. Excuse me. That'd be awesome.
That does sound good. It reminds me of you know, Peter Jackson's editions in the Hobbit movies, where mm-hmm. you know the trio of the White Council go and face off against the Necromancer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And if I had to choose another one, I probably would explore some pre-Fellowship Aragorn tales. Aragorn mm-hmm. is one of my top five Lord of the Rings characters. Just absolutely love him, love his story. And so anything we can get of pre-Strider and Bree, I would just be thrilled to have that adventure.
Yeah, I think that would be a very cool movie, especially if you could do it in an anthology segment, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have multiple adventures that have a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, yeah, you absolutely could. I mean, that would be a great 2 to 3 movie set that you could do, I think, so for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, thank you so much. This has been, it's an exciting time to be a Lord of the Rings fan. We have so many great tales coming to the screen. Thanks for just wandering through all of those with me today. If any of Lord of the Rings listeners want to engage more with the Lorehounds, where should they go?
They should go to thelorehounds.com, where you can find all of our podcasts. We have plenty of stuff. We actually have a dedicated Tolkien feed now for people who just want Tolkien. Mm-hmm. So you can look up the Lorehounds on your podcast feed. You'll find our main feed. You'll find our Tolkien feed. Plenty of stuff going on. We'll do Rings of Power season 2 full coverage. Also, I want to plug somebody else on our network is Rings and Rituals. Marilyn Arpukila is rewatching season 1 of the Rings of Power with Dr. Sarah Brown from the Prancing Pony podcast. And they are going through episode by episode to look at it through the lens of ritual. So they're looking at, you know, the Harfoots doing their Nobody Gets Left Behind dance and the dwarves singing to the mountain. So it's a lot of really good conversation.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of religious overtones and undertones all throughout Lord of the Rings, and ritual mm-hmm. is definitely a key portion of that. So yeah, that sounds really cool.
Right.
And I remember, right, if you guys have a Discord server, right, with a Lord of the Rings dedicated channel. If it's been a while since I've been on there, but is that still live, yeah. still going?
Oh, we're still doing Discord. The Discord's popping off tonight, as the kids say, because the Acolyte just dropped and people are chatting about that. But yeah, we have Tolkien channels, we've got Star Wars, anything you could think of, you could chat about pretty much.
All right, sounds good. Sounds like a great place for my kind of people.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, John, thank you for wandering Middle Earth with me today.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.